this tsunami that is headed their way is going to hit them like, you know, like a Thor hammer coming out of nowhere.
50%, something like half of Americans are really in, you know, financial deep right now.
But Satoshi's got a million coins-ish, seeing an address. They've never moved. They've never been hacked. What is Michael so worried about?
I think he's worried because his coins are at Coinbase and he has no idea.
I saw this play out with my own eyes. I am telling you, it is not a pretty picture. And Lebanon is like a little hole in the wall compared to the United States.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Tony as always, and our friend Kevin is back. Gents, welcome to the show. Let's jump right in here. So, we're going to watch this video from Jamie Dimon. Listen to
and
this.
And you are going to see a crack in the bond market, okay? It is going to happen. And I tell this to my regulators, some of who are in this room, I'm telling you it's going to happen, and you're going to panic. I'm not going to panic.
So, Jamie Dimon, usually we're just sitting here criticizing him, but today he is observant of something that we've been talking about for a long time. Kevin, I'm going to let you... Oh, and by the way, the actual tweet here was Jack Cruz saying, a crack, Dimon is warning you a tsunami is coming. Kevin, why don't you give your interpretation of Jamie Dimon's comments? What do you think this means?
Yeah, actually, I'm kind of reminded of every time I go into my basement, there's this little crack in the foundation. And I think that's what I see right now is the little tiny sliver where everybody's jumping into gold or jumping into Bitcoin. That's why I see the prices rising, because nobody has any trust in the U.S. government or what they're doing or the deficit they run. And all they do is issue short-term T-bills right now. They can't issue anything longer. Nobody wants to buy the 10-year treasury. No individual, no nation state. That's why you see people jumping into harder assets. Janet Yellen dealt Bessent, a challenging situation. Bessent was very confident about what he was going to do until he got into the office and then realized we can't do anything. We're too far down this hole. So what are we going to do? We're going to print more money. And nobody wants to buy it. So that's why you see the prices drop, the interest rates are rising, the tariff thing didn't work out, and we're in this pickle. So unfortunately, they're going to keep stretching this thing out. They're going to issue Tether. They're going to stretch that as far as they can. And Jamie Dimon, you know, I don't agree with him about a lot of things, but just like that crack in my basement, it's going to get wider and wider and wider, and eventually the foundation's going to fall out, and we're going to be screwed unless you're in something like Bitcoin.
Tony, before I hear your take, I'm going to jump to the next story because I think then we'll watch one more video of Trump here, and I want to hear what you have to say about it because it's all related.
And if we had a good Fed chairman, you would lower rates. And you know what?
If inflation happened in a year from now or 2 years, let them raise rates. But we're going out for long-term debt or short-term debt. We have a lot of debt coming due because Biden had all short-term debt, most of it. And we would get a lower rate, a lower interest rate if this guy would lower rates. We get a lower interest rate. It's unbelievable. And he's worried about inflation. If he worries about inflation any longer, all he has to do is get the lower rate, let us go out, borrow at a much lower rate, much lower. You could go down a point or two, but go out, borrow it. And if in 2 years inflation comes back, he raises rates. But he keeps them the same. It's insane.
What's your next Fed chair? Are you already thinking about who your next Fed chair? Yeah, I know it's 2026 when he's targets right. So you're already thinking about him.
It's coming out very soon.
Who are you thinking about for that?
I could tell you, but I don't think of.
What do you make?
I have a pretty good idea.
Alrighty, so the long story short there, it was a little quiet on my end, not sure if you guys could hear it, but Trump's already picked a new Fed chair for when Powell's term expires next year, and he's saying he just needs to lower rates. We need to reduce the cost of government debt, and sounds like QE coming. So I think this is what Jamie Dimon is warning everyone of, that people don't want our debt. We're going to print. Tony, what's your take on this?
It's game over, man. You guys ever seen the T-shirt that says, you know, I'm a bomb diffuser. If you see me running, you better be sprinting and staying close. When Jamie Dimon tells you that the bond market is about to break, that's, to me, it's exactly the same. There's a bomb about to go off and they can't diffuse it you better fucking run and run fast into something of a hard asset. And so that probably explains why, you know, Bitcoin is rallying. I mean, starting to rally. It's not much of a rally, but soon it will be full out panic mode. And that's the, you know, that's what happens when everything's broken. So they're panicked. They're all panicked, whether it's Trump or anyone else. They have no idea what to do. You know, when you go past the point of no return, there's nothing you can do. And the scary thing for me is that most Americans have no idea any of this stuff is happening. But they don't even know what a bond is, let alone a treasury bill. Like, I mean, this is not their world. They're just focused on their lives, you know, trying to, you know, make ends meet and what have you. This tsunami that is headed their way is going to hit them like, you know, like a Thor hammer coming out of nowhere. And the damage that it's going to cause is going to make 2008 look like Disneyland. So it really is heartbreaking because you know what's coming, but there's nothing you can do. And you hear all these big plans that Trump is talking about, but these are all distractions, theatrics. There's literally nothing he can do to reverse this. Maybe extended by a couple of weeks, maybe a few months, but that's about it, you know? And who's going to benefit from this? Like, who's actually paying attention to Bitcoin and, you know, the current events? It's like a fraction of the population. But the damage is going to be felt by everyone. So if you're still in fiat, man, panic, I don't think, is the right word for it. Like, you should be freaking out and finding any ways of jumping into a hard asset. I don't think it's gold. Bitcoin is definitely the way of the future. We're not going back to the fax machine and the Stone Age here. So gold had its time. It's no longer it. Brace yourselves. Tsunami is definitely headed our way.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this is one of those, you know, I think Jamie Dimon is often disingenuous, but he's not an idiot and he understands what's going on and he's paying attention. And I can't remember, what was it? Did you guys see, maybe we talked about it on a banter previously, that JP Morgan is now going to offer like a Bitcoin-backed lending product or something? Like, they're getting in the game. Like, he has some level of awareness of this. What I think is interesting, or what I'm really curious about, is whether or not by the time like this fracture becomes in the bond market becomes completely undeniable, because we all see it, but like the medicine really hasn't been delivered yet. What adoption rate is Bitcoin going to be? What level of understanding are institutions going to have? What level of understanding are individuals, families going to have? Because it feels to me like we're still going to be very, very, very early, like less than 1% global adoption kind of thing. And so I wouldn't be surprised, and Tony, I know you're going to hate me saying this, I wouldn't be surprised if gold does well for a period of time, because that's the only thing that a lot of people still understand. And then there's going to be this migration over the next few years into Bitcoin. So I don't know if either of you guys have a comment on that.
And by the way, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Tony, you got to tell me that my fancy Bitcoin waylight isn't on. Let's get that going. Anyway, sorry, go on. So gold.
No, you're right. People will, you know, run to what they understand. And, you know, too many people with money still understand gold. But for me, it's almost like if you visualize, you know, there's a massive fire and there's only one boat, life raft. And when that fire reaches everyone, everybody's going to be jumping into this boat. So they're going to be doing all sorts of craziness out of, you know, panic. I have no idea what to do. They just want to do something. There's going to be tons of mistakes done during that moment of fear. And that's how a lot of people are going to accelerate the losses that they're already going to, you know, face. And so how that plays out, there's no telling other than saying it's going to be extremely messy and very harsh.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Well, Tony, you spoke about Americans are just trying to go on with their lives and just get by. So our next story is actually 52% of U.S. consumers cannot cover a $2,000 emergency expense using only savings. Furthermore, almost a third of Americans cannot handle a $500 unexpected expenditure. So things really are getting bad. And this is what I talk about a lot. And I didn't know that I was approximately right. I said, you know, that 50%, something like half of Americans are really in, you know, financial deep shit right now. And a $2,000 emergency expense probably sounds like a lot of money to a lot of people, but that's like, that could be, you know, one time at the auto shop, you know, getting your car fixed or whatever, you know, damage to your house or, you know, a pipe breaks. Like it's pretty crazy what people are unable to afford at this stage. Kevin, why don't you take this one? What's your take? What do you think the implications of this are?
Well, when I saw this, when you sent it to me, my favorite part about this whole post is the source is the Federal Reserve. So let's put this into perspective. The Fed's putting this information piece out about Americans not being able to afford $2,000, but they're contributing to it by the keystroke of printing more money. So they're pulling the rug out from under us, but then they're saying, hey, look at you all. You can't afford anything. I just think it's kind of a circus. You know, I was reminded too, not only the inflation and the money, M2 supply increasing, but also the signage that they make on top of it, because it's a digital money. I mean, it's not like the Treasury or the Fed who has to print the actual money. We're kind of past that point. Do we still print money? Sure. But most of the stuff is just additional lines in a ledger digitally in a bank. So they're just making 100% profit on increasing the supply, and you know, we suffer. But aside from all this, like let's take Bitcoin, let's take gold, let's take everything out of the picture. I mean, Americans need to learn a lesson. You know, we kind of live in a financial privilege country. We're very fortunate to have banks. I mean, even if you don't agree with what they do for you, but people need to get on a budget. You know, I understand it's hard to make money. Sometimes it's really challenging, especially your circumstances, but, you know, you need a budget. You need to stop going out. You need to stop, you know, putting your burrito on Klarna and trying to subsidize your burrito. Stop spending money. Stop getting Uber Eats. Go make a meal in your kitchen. It's probably healthier for you. You're going to save some money, and you need at least an emergency fund. I mean, personal finance is so uneducated here. And then once you have that foundation, then you can start learning about, you know, where your excess money should go, and it should go into hard assets like Bitcoin. I mean, there's foundations of lessons that need to be learned.
Yeah.
They're just not being learned.
No, I think that's great advice. I think where I sympathize are for the people who are simply in a position where like they already can't get ahead, and it's not a matter of, you know, financing the burrito on Klarna, but just, I was born into poverty and I have no idea how to scrape my way out, but my grocery bill keeps increasing, even if I'm just trying to get by. Tony, as a non-American, I'm curious, because to me, I agree with Kevin, like we tend to be relatively financially privileged in the United States. It seems to me like this must be a problem in most of Europe, you know, probably across the globe. There are probably a handful of economies that are a bit more disciplined, are much more disciplined than Americans financially. But what's your thought on this?
It's an international problem. For me, watching this, I don't understand. Like, it's really mind-boggling for me how people are not pissed. You know, like, you know, most just complain and, you know, try to find useless solutions to this problem. And it's fundamentally because nobody understands where the source of it comes from. Like, how is this not a crime that over half the population of the United States is below the poverty line? Like, how is that not criminal that you can't afford a $2,000 emergency? Like you said, like, what can you possibly buy for $2,000? That's useful. What, you're going to eat a potato chip a week on $2,000 if you have a family? Like, how is that forgivable? That's, to me, it makes my blood boil why nobody's reacting to this, like, in the way that they should. You know where the problem is. Why hasn't anybody done anything useful about it other than complain? Complaining does nothing. It just extends the pain. And so now we're getting to the point where you can't extend it anymore. So you're going to get annihilated. So forget the $2,000 emergency. You're not going to afford a $2 emergency because, you know, things are going to get so dire. And the source of the problem is laughing at you. They're putting out a public statement that, haha, look at you clowns, 52% of you can't afford a $500 or $2,000 emergency. But who caused this problem? It's the same people that are posting this thing, and what's their solution? But don't worry, we're going to save you. We're going to print even more money so that that $2,000 that you might have will actually buy you something worth five, because now it has no more value because there's a lot of it out there. You understand like how this is a lose-lose scenario because the system is rigged from every angle. And that is the lesson that most Americans and most people globally have not learned. Like, it's almost like fascinating for me. And I learned that fucking shocking fact in Lebanon. After everybody woke up with a balance of zero, how there was no revolution on the streets. Like, it's fascinating to me how this does not happen when you know who's responsible for the obliteration of your life and your loved ones. So I don't know how this is going to play out, for not just in the U.S., but just worldwide. The U.S. will be the last one maybe to fall, but it's definitely headed there. It's very clear based on these headlines that we're reading. So brace yourself, man. Like, I'm not happy about this. For me, like, in fact, I'm really worried. It really stresses me out when I hear these headlines, because it brings back memories of trauma. You know, I saw this play out with my own eyes. I am telling you, it is not a pretty picture. And Lebanon is like a little hole in the wall compared to the United States. You guys get nuked like I got nuked. You guys own over 500 million privately owned assault weapons. Do you think people in their rational minds are going to react normally? Like, just picture that movie for a second, because that's all I'm seeing. Maybe I'm crazy, maybe I'm extreme, but I lived through something like this. And when I read headlines like this, that's the only thought that comes back into my head. I'm like, oh shit, I hope to God this is not how it's going to play out. So you want to know what I think? This is what I think. And for me, like, I'm really worried about this.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. The good news, though, the redeeming aspect of this story is that Trump has rebranded Invest America as Trump Accounts, and every child born between January 1st, 2025 and December 31st, 2028 will receive a $1,000 government-funded account tracking the stock market. So at least our children will be rescued, Tony. The way I interpret this is the government steals your money either through taxation or through money printing and the inflationary forces that follow. And now they're giving it back to kids who, by the way, I have kids who haven't put any money into this. And they're going to give them $1,000 to start this little account. And it's going to track the stock market, which, by the way, simply has tracked M2 money supply growth for the last 20 years. So, Kevin, I'll hand this one to you first. What's your take? To me, this is just like the epitome of clown world. Like, what do you think?
All right. So I don't know if you guys remember this. It was a long time ago, like 2020. You remember COVID? You remember when the economy wasn't doing so great and people weren't doing well? And they said, hey, here's a stimulus check. And we want you to go and spend the money and invest it into the economy. And oh, yeah, we're going to increase the money supply. To actually give you this, it's this all over again. It's wrapped up in a nice wrapper. It's a nice present for your kids. People's hearts are going to be, you know, so touched by this. Trump's handing this out to the kids. It's money printing all over again. And unfortunately, it's going to have the same effect. It's going to make hard assets skyrise because people don't trust what they're doing with their money anymore. And on top of it, my conviction is, instead of going back to what we just said previously, instead of just handing money out and you're putting, at least it's an account where hopefully these kids can't take it out whenever they want or the parents can't, you know, it's treated like a government retirement account where you have to take it out at 59 and a half. But why don't we take the money and actually educate people on personal finance? It's kind of like what Tony was saying, is he's beside himself that people aren't waking up to the fact that, you know, you don't know how to manage your money in the richest country, arguably, in the world. Why don't we educate people? I mean, I personally think the government doesn't want you to know, because that's how they control their citizens, their ignorance. But really what they should do is take all this money and teach people personal finance, give them a foundation, teach them how to manage their money, teach them how to raise that $2,000 on any income and sustain themselves. And then when they have a surplus, buy Bitcoin because that's the only thing that's going to let you opt out and escape the system. But it's a very heartfelt, you know, handout, but people need to wake up. This is not going to benefit them. It's not going to benefit their kids. It's just going to pull the rug out even more.
Yeah, no, I obviously agree with that. It's now, Kevin, I do have to take issue with your comment that the government should provide education. And for a guy, as much as we talked in Vegas and you were always taking the practical side and I was taking the ideological side, to imagine the government not only proactively educating in some meaningful way, but teaching the right concepts to me, that sounds like a pipe dream. I think you're the ideological one on this issue.
We both know it's never going to happen, but you know, it would be nice to see it.
Tony.
It would definitely have been nice to see it, but yeah, I tend to agree that that is wishful thinking, my friends. It's like you have the chances of winning the lottery 100 times before that, you know, even comes close. But about that, that marketing gimmick that Trump is putting out, I think there's an important detail that is being overlooked here. $1,000 is automatically created for every newborn, if I understood this correct. So for me, it's the word automatic. Where is that bank account going to be opened? They don't say that, right?
Probably JP Morgan.
So for me, that is just being marketed as like, you know, such a good thing. But this is building the foundation for the central bank digital currency for every one of these little kids that are being born. This is not a gift. This is the jail sentence for someone who has no idea. So for them to open up an automatic bank account and to fund it with this garbage, that means it's a centralized database, right? And wasn't it that not that long ago where someone contacted Palantir, I think, to create a digital database on every single American? Could there be a connection somewhere? Is that also a conspiracy theory, or are the dots starting to connect here? Government in its current form is never going to do anything for anyone's benefit. Everything they say, you need to look behind the lines of that words. So when I hear automatically created, the first thing that rings in my head is a central bank digital currency, because that is the only way you can automatically do anything, is that if you pick the place, you pick the information, you pick all the elements surrounding it. So every kid born, and whenever this thing takes place, consider them locked in a jail sentence on a database that is fully programmable by a government. Now, Trump may be a nice guy, but the people after him may not be nice. But if the system exists, you're fucked, no matter who's in place. That is why Bitcoin exists, is to strip these people away from any possibility of abuse. When you strip the power of money from government, that no longer becomes a concern. But as long as that's in place, and as long as people keep extending this lifeline because they think this guy is better than that guy, or this guy has a better, you know, investment idea than that guy, that stupidity is always going to linger. You need to opt out. The world needs to opt out into better money that is no longer controllable by any living soul. That is the only way everybody's life improves. And when you literally go back to being a free human being, without this, this is all a waste of time. It's all bullshit, and a lot of people are going to continue getting wrecked and hurt over and over again until they finally learn and, I guess, revolt, if that's what it's going to end up with.
Yeah, Tony, you're bringing the heat this morning, man. I think the irony, or not the irony, this is like to be expected. You know, it's like Social Security. It's bankrupt for a reason. And now they're starting these you know, investment accounts for kids who don't have an option. It's just going to track the stock market. It's like, give me some optionality. Like, just let me keep that $1,000 and let me decide what I want to do with it. And give me ways to like give money to my kids and put it into an investment account if that's what I want, or just to buy Bitcoin and keep it in cold storage, right? Like, give me the optionality. It should be my money to begin with.
Yeah, well, that ties back to your point about education. Most people still think the dollar is money. It's not money. It's worthless paper that, you know, you need to stop thinking of as money. The only reason it works is because there's too many people who still think it's money. So they still accept it from one another. But if every American took half an hour just to study money on its most preliminary levels, you would already start seeing a fundamental shift in thinking. You giving me $1,000 of what? Of toilet paper? By the time that kid becomes 18, what's he going to buy with that $1,000?
Well, if he's lucky, he'll still be able to afford about approximately $1,000 worth of goods, because he's just going to track the inflation rate, the monetary inflation rate. So,
man, these things, they just irk me to no end, because they're visibly mocking the people, right? Like, they know, or they think, genuinely believe that you're all idiots. And so they can keep, you know, dangling these little carrots, and everybody will believe it because, you know, why not? The education reverses that trend. It castrates that entire machine. But you need people willing to learn, to listen to begin with, and not just like put things off because, you know, TikTok brains all day long, right? There's also that is, but again, it's all part of the same matrix. You know, why do these things exist? It's to keep you distracted and useless, basically.
Tony, so cynical. It's just for the kids. Come on, man. Let's just trust what Trump's doing.
Man, you guys, quickly, you guys got me going today. This is unbelievable.
The other thing I thought too is when Trump made the comment, he said, "Oh, we're going to pick a great index fund," right? So he's not going to give you a choice. I mean, at least give him the choice to invest in IBIT if you're going to, you know, keep it in the system, or, you know, some other Bitcoin ETF. But I think it's funny because this is just Keynesian economics. You know, they're basically going to increase the money supply, right? But then they're going to stimulate the economy, quote unquote, by injecting it into only the centralized companies. They're not going to let you invest in something that opts out, even if it is an ETF. They're just going to increase the money supply, and they're going to choose the investment, and they're going to say, "Oh, we're just going to pad the, the pockets of all these corporations." Thinking that they're doing well, but we all know that goes.
Yeah. So everyone front run this, get invested in the Mag 7, get in the S&P 500, right? Because they're about to bump your bags there. No, I'm kidding. Buy Bitcoin, opt out, self-custody only. All righty. Congressman Tim Burkett introduces a bill to turn Trump's strategic Bitcoin reserve executive order into law. We don't need to linger on this too long, but just for everyone to understand, so Trump signed this executive order, which basically means that you could pretty quickly overwrite that if a new administration comes in and they say, "We don't want an executive order." Codifying it into law would be a significant move. It would make it much harder for someone to unwind from this. So interesting that it seems like these sorts of bills are getting more traction. We hear, Cynthia Lummis talk about it. Obviously, I'm not like the most excitable guy when it comes to the topic of SBRs, and Kevin had to hear an earful when we were hanging out in Las Vegas. But Tony, let's just concede where I need to, like, bullish for Bitcoin's price. The government is probably here. No reason to fight it. Bitcoin's for enemies. So, Tony, what's your take on this one?
Of course, man. It's like it's expected. Bitcoin is for anyone, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And of course, you're going to find, you know, governments and institutions jump into this because, unfortunately, they understand it. And so they're going to be the first ones to try to get as much as possible. If they turn this into law, it's definitely bullish. I mean, at some point, this, I guess, will turn around and bite them in the ass, because it will contribute to the separation of money and state. I know right now they're trying to financialize Bitcoin somehow. Might work for a little while until, you know, mass education, you know, increases and people become aware that, you know, they don't need any of these silly services over Bitcoin, that the only true value is for you to hold it and use it as money, because that's really what it is. As more people, you know, learn and understand this, you know, that system falls apart. But I guess if it's a transition that we have to go through, so be it. But it's definitely not bad news. And one thing I can tell you for sure is that once they buy that Bitcoin, you're never going to see it again. So if people are still expecting these crazy cycles, I have bad news for you. I have a feeling these cycles are a thing of the past now. And the window of time for you to go out and buy this on-chain Bitcoin and hold it yourself in self-custody, that window is getting tinier and tinier by the day. And soon, it'll be gone. And the only way 8 billion people are going to benefit from Bitcoin is on layer twos. You'll never be able to own a UTXO. And that's really where the generational wealth fortitude comes from.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. Kevin, what do you think?
I'm going to put on my NGU hat for a moment because I know it's not a popular topic. No, I think I like what this guy said. You know, he's definitely from the South, and I think he said we need to get off the dadgum bench, which I think is a great term. But codification of a bill into law, I think, is a good thing. I mean, yes, like you said, it's inevitable that the government's going to get involved. It's inevitable that nation states are going to get involved. It's going to be part of their strategic reserve. Corporations are going to use it as a treasury. I think this is overall good for Bitcoin's price. However, just like you guys espouse, I totally agree. It is a store of value, but it's also a currency, you know, and I had the conviction, and this is something Michael and I have talked about. I had the conviction of saying, you know what? I see the price appreciation. I know where it's going to go. We know where it's going to go. There's only one option for it to go up in price and demand. So our instinct as humans is to hold on to it. But we need to spend it as well. We need to, you know, spend the UTXOs. We need to signal that this is money as well. So go out there and buy your Steak and Shake. Support companies that offer Bitcoin as payment. You know, send it to your friends. Don't use Venmo when you can, because you can do both. You know, spend it and use it. That's what it's for. It's savings technology, but it's also money.
Yeah, spend and replace.
Yeah. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah. So the other thing I'll add, and so this is me giving the government maybe some credit, which is not something I'm known to do. But one of the biggest problems of government is a lack of clarity. There's so much unpredictability. I think that codifying this into law gives people some stability to understand, okay, it's here to stay, versus is this a Trump administration thing? And then AOC is our next president. And like, it's gone all of a sudden. Like we saw this with the tariffs, right? Like the tariffs are on. Okay, now they're off. Okay, we're negotiating some deals. In 90 days, they're going to be back on. Like people hate the uncertainty, and it's really frustrating that it's government. Like we saw this when the interest rate hikes happened. Part of the reason Silicon Valley Bank failed, you could argue it was like poor risk management. They didn't plan for duration risk of the, you know, the debt that they held. You could also argue, though, that the Fed had been saying we're not going to increase rates, and then all of a sudden they increase rates like dramatically, you know, largest rate increase, you know, cycle in 50 years or whatever. And so having some level of stability where people can plan for the future and understand that, I generally believe that's why I just don't like the government, is because the government's going to do expedient, they're going to make expedient decisions over and over and over for political purposes rather than to allow people the opportunity to plan for the future. So, you know, kudos to them if they get this through, I guess. I don't like that they're going to be using my tax dollars or money that they print to buy Bitcoin that I would rather my friends and family have, but you know.
No, but the thing is, hold on, let me add something here. I mean, you mentioned stability, and it's a good thing, and I guess to a certain degree I agree with you. But here's the thing, man. Bitcoin doesn't need the government to put it into law. Bitcoin doesn't give a shit about the government, whether it's the US or any other government. It's going to stay whether they like it or not, whether they put it into law or not. The fact that so many people are happy that the government likes Bitcoin, you're just continuing to give power to the wrong system, right? The real way to approach this is that we don't need you or your approval. We have this thing. You're not going to get rid of it. You can't. It provides for a better life for everyone, with or without your consent. So we're going to use it because that's how we improve our lives. And you are going to be forced to adopt it because otherwise you're irrelevant. We will we'll continue to exist and move forward without you. So it's important to reiterate that government approval of Bitcoin, while it's nice, it's absolutely not necessary and goes completely against the very ethos for which it was created. separation of money and state. And what you said, Kevin, was spot on. Bitcoin is money. It has to be used as money. Otherwise, there is no store of value. The government and institution narrative about store and hold and never spend, that is bullshit. The only way it remains decentralized and secure to have that going to the moon store of value is when it's used as money. There is no other way because, you know, certain people can store and hold it, but not everyone can do this, but everyone can use it as money. And so when it's used in such a way, then the store of value for those who are fortunate to be able to hold it, that's when it goes up. Without the medium of exchange, again, there is no store of value. It's not you can pick and choose which parts of Bitcoin you like. Money first, store of value, unit of account second. They all work interoperably like a synergistic wheel, with the medium of exchange has to be the first thing on the priority list.
I think that's well said, Tony. Alrighty, guys, last up, our friends over at River. Oh, Sailor must hate this. River Exchange completes proof of reserves, proving they own 100% of all customer Bitcoin. Transparency on the blockchain. This is the way. So Michael Saylor's, is he going to show up at their kids' houses because now he knows their address? what was his take on all this? So I think very cool. We love the guys at River. They do a great job. They show proof of reserves. They keep 100% reserves of their customer Bitcoin. I think that's a very important thing. We'd also encourage people to get a no KYC stack of Bitcoin as well. But this is definitely the way. I'll just kind of leave it to either of you to comment. Actually, Kevin, hey, I don't know. We've talked about proof of reserves extensively. What's your thought on this?
Well, I'm going to take the Sailor approach and. I like what he brings to the table because I think it's kind of funny because he's always touting Bitcoin's security and the SHA-256 and, you know, how unhackable the technology is, which I agree. I mean, I think until quantum computing becomes a threat, even if it does, that's a long ways away and we'll adjust accordingly. But right now it's unhackable. And my whole thing is, he talks about Satoshi. He loves Satoshi, how brilliant he was. But Satoshi's got a million coins-ish sitting in an address. They've never moved. They've never been hacked. What is Michael so worried about? If he's kind of contradicting himself where he's espousing all the benefits and the unhackable nature. But if you believe in that, then show your address. Prove that you have what you have, just like River's doing. So I think he needs to walk the walk like River is. I mean, I think they're also a great company. And I think he needs to put his mouth or his money where his mouth is, literally.
Kevin, I think I don't think he's worried about the address. I think that's sort of the public narrative. I think he's worried because his coins are at Coinbase and he has no idea.
Yeah, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here. Yes.
Yeah. Tony.
But yeah, I mean, when you're cussing with Coinbase, who knows? Who knows what you actually have over there?
Yeah, man, Tony. Of course. I mean, I like Sailor, but I think recently he's been talking from both sides of his mouth, which is something I'm not a big fan of. If you're an institution dealing with Bitcoin, in my opinion, you have to show proof of reserves because if you want to establish like trust with your clients, well, how else you're going to do it? And, you know, it's a very easy approach. It takes 5 minutes. You set it up, proof of reserves, your clients know you have what you say you have, and everything is good. Regardless, all of these institutions, River or otherwise, as amazing as they are, these places should be pit stops, not final destinations. You go there, you do your business, you buy your Bitcoin, and then you withdraw it on autopilot instantly into your own self-custody. You do not want to leave it on any exchange or with any institution for any amount of time. Because otherwise, you know, you are still living in that broken system, you know, susceptible to all of the counterparty risk that it comes with. So River is a fantastic company. There are other companies like it that are great. Proof of reserves, in my opinion, if you're dealing with Bitcoin and money, you must show it. You know, using that as an excuse, especially after you've publicly announced how much you have, like, what are you afraid of? You've already told the world what you bought. Show it. What's the problem? If you don't, Well, you know, then you're going to start getting all sorts of crazy ideas in people's heads, thinking, why are you hiding? Is there something maybe behind the scenes that's going on that we need to investigate? You open up a can of worms that's completely unnecessary. Be upfront, be honest. It's the shortest way to build trust with folks.
I completely agree with that, Tony. I think that's a good place to wrap. For everyone listening, stick around for another minute. You can hear a little bit about the Bitcoin Way, how we can help you. In the meantime, gents, it's been a pleasure. Kevin, good having you back on the show, brother. And Tony, we'll talk soon.
Absolutely, guys. Great talk.
Take care, guys. Hey there. Thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth, and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe. Stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.